Let's let him interview us.
Yeah. That was delightful. This should show.
We have a secondary career as a Civil War reenacting doo-wop group. You should hear our John Brown's body. It's extraordinary.
Well, let me introduce
That's
what
our
we're
next
talking
project.
To. I'm Sean McCord at the 2015 Virginia Film Festival here in the always accommodating and ambient Whiskey Jar, talking with the directors of Hallowed Ground, which screens tonight, 6 p.m. at the Southern. Three directors, all here, and go ahead and introduce yourselves.
My name is Mark Rozzo.
I'm Sam Erickson.
I'm Matthew Amster.
Let's talk about the film first, but I also want to find out how three guys work together in the film. Tell me about Hallowed Ground.
Go ahead, Mark.
The film or the concept of Hallowed Ground? The idea of Hallowed Ground.
Let's talk about the film.
Okay, that's a little bit easier. Hallowed Ground is a feature documentary. Mm-hmm. It's about Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. It's not about the Battle of Gettysburg, which took place 152 years ago, but it's about Gettysburg now. And it's about how the story of Gettysburg continues to evolve over time, and we follow a cast of characters who've been sucked into that place. Largely, they've renounced their lives in other places to commune more fully with this place.
Which
is kind of a sacred American space. So we're looking at how American history plays out in lives of ordinary citizens who embody that memory and live it on a day-to-day basis.
So the film is about modern-day Gettysburg, the town, and the people who live there, who were drawn there because of the Battle of Gettysburg.
Yes, because of the battle, but also because of the mythos of the place. I mean, you know, and what the battle meant in the broader scope of the Civil War, and in fact about the meaning of what it means to be American, that it kind of, a lot of people think that sort of saved the Union, you know, Gettysburg, or certainly some people believe that.
But each of the people in the film have their own personal journey and quest that they're on, or their own mission. And they're all really, really different. So we have one person who, in a sense, becomes Abe Lincoln for 16 years of his life, and another who's following the passion of his father, who's an architect who had built a really important building that comes under attack by the Park Service and eventually is demolished. Mm-hmm. And another person who's constantly re-experiencing his career. We have a battlefield guy, a man who inherited the wax museum from his father.
Right.
So each of these people are experiencing transformation in their lives, and I think any film that's going to be interesting shows people going through change, and we didn't know what the changes were going to be, but they all connect to the fact that this place has a kind of special pull and
definitely
a kind of energy that in a way, in some ways, it can be also somewhat destructive to their people's lives because they feel so passionate, and when you feel passionate about something, you're vulnerable, and so the film has a kind of serious connection to modern politics and the history, but also just the personal change.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, most of these characters are almost schizophrenic in that they each have a very different public persona than their private persona. We go to a lot of their houses and see their private lives as well, and they're very different than the people that they portray publicly, and then that's also really interesting to sort of see behind the curtain in a way.
So when you say portray publicly, are these people all reenactors?
No, they're not.
Actually, we kind of consciously avoided the reenactor world because we felt that was covered really well elsewhere, even though some of these guys do dress up, and you find that they kind of live in both eras simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
We were very interested in any moment where we could find the 19th and 21st centuries colliding.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see a guy in like a Union uniform on the back of on an ATV, or like a Victorian lady with a giant like big gulp Slurpee.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we were looking for, because we wanted to inject that humor. Because the thing is, Gettysburg is an incredibly haunting place. It's a beautiful landscape. 51,000 men shed their blood there in the largest battle ever fought in the Western Hemisphere, and yet it's also this place of roadside Americana. It's really rich. It has this whole layer of kitsch on it, and those two things, the sacred space, the crazy American mom-and-pop marketplace coming together in one place, I mean, it was really all American, totally unique, visually bizarre.
Visually amazing.
And beautiful, and that's I think that's really what drew us in initially to the play.
Well, let's talk about that. What drew you to this as a subject matter?
Mark went there as a child all the time. I mean, I think a lot of people drove to Gettysburg. It was a place, especially in the people of our age, that, you know, when the auto trip was became a real family vacation, Mark would often go. So why don't you tell about your experience as a child?
I think we all have experiences there. I mean, it was, for me as a kid, it was a favorite field trip. I knew I had a great-great-grandfather who fought there, stories from my grandmother. And I think that I was vibing on that, you know, this landscape is so beautiful and kind of sad. Something horrible happened here. And, okay, let's go to the wax museum now, or like, it's time to buy a T-shirt.
Yeah, that's the wax museum there.
You know, for kids, it became that weird thing where a place of tragedy, in a way, became a place for entertainment. Mm-hmm. And it continues to be that way. It's unique in that sense. And I got drawn back in when I was a writer for the Los Angeles Times, and I wrote a story about the building that Matthew was talking about, the Cyclorama Center, the heart of the battlefield.
I remember going there myself as a kid.
There you go.
Richard Deutscher's famous work.
Yeah, right. Millions of people went through that building. Then it was targeted for demolition starting in the late 90s as not being 1863 enough for the battlefield. So we got very curious about the battle between the historical preservationists who wanted everything to be 1863, the architectural preservationists who were fighting to save one of the most significant modernist buildings in the East Coast of America. And that tussle was the thing that brought us in. And it's kind of, I don't want to say it's the heart of our movie, but it forms a very strong narrative thread.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly a starting point for the film. So I moved to Gettysburg in 2002 to become a professor at Gettysburg College. And when I got there, the first thing people said to me is, you know, you want to get out of here in the summer. It's filled with tourists. It's annoying. You got to use the back alleys. And I initially said, what are you talking about? This is fascinating. There's all, you know, the reenactors and also other things like the bikers and other things that are drawn to Gettysburg. But I walked into that Cyclorama building one day, and it struck a chord. I walked out after seeing the painting, and I walked out onto this ramp that was there before they demolished the building. And you could see the landscape of Pickett's Charge, you know, right after having witnessed this painting.
Mm-hmm.
And I suddenly kind of felt a little bit of, you know, why people pilgrimage to this place.
And that was the design. That's why that building was designed that way, was to give people that experience.
And many people growing up in Gettysburg have this kind of a connection to it. And then soon after that, I heard that the building was coming down and that it was slated for demolition. And so that was interesting to me. Who decides what history is valuable? How is it that this modern building is no longer...
It had been there one-third of the history of the battlefield.
Right. Right. I mean, it was a part of history itself.
So that was
maybe a different history, but...
Yeah, and that was a starting point for us. And we met, literally, both teams, Mark and Sam and myself, separately. We were meeting up with the architect who was coming back trying to generate
son
publicity.
Of Dion Neutra. Mm-hmm. He set us up. He basically was covering his bases. He got two different film crews to come and make sure that he was being covered, and it was us. And
that started a conversation about, well, what other stories are there here that we can uncover that we'll talk about? And it really became a story about different people's passions, because it was Dion's passion to save his father's building. And
he was going to chain himself to the building. You know?
And so all the other people we've met in the film have come from, I mean, there's a battlefield guide who moves to the area because he just wants to give tours. He just wants to give hundreds of tours.
He quits his job as a lawyer in Philadelphia and moves out.
Yeah. And also, interestingly enough, that battlefield guide is grew up in Cuba. You know, so you get a sense of the reach of Gettysburg in the imagination. And for him coming, escaping Castro's Cuba, let's say, coming to the United States, it became incredibly meaningful for him as a naturalized, you know, American to be able to have a relationship with that place. And the history, he just got into it. So he's out there on that battlefield every day, giving tours.
Right.
Ooh, with a great perspective.
And another of the characters quit a job as a research biologist at Fort Detrick and built with his own hands a log cabin chapel similar to the ones that they ministered from in the Civil War, and just declared himself a preacher and said, I'm a preacher. All of a sudden had a congregation, and he struggles to save his building, comes under threat, a different legal threat, because he built it without permits and everything like that. So that becomes part of the film. And there's sort of parallel storylines with the little chapel and the beautiful modernist visitor center.
So did the three of you meet when you came together for this film?
Well, Sam and I have known each other for about 30 years. We went to college together, and we've done some other kinds of projects. And it weirdly, you know, I feel like Gettysburg is a place that we had talked about for a long time and really only experienced together when we went to see Dion Neutra threatening to chain himself to the building, which is when we met Matthew. So it just felt like a natural sort of partnership. You know, we were fellow travelers.
So you went from two guys who worked together on films before. Right. So now,
then he and walks in. He's an anthropologist with the filmmaking, like a year. How would you describe what your study, your field of study is?
Yeah, I mean, I've been teaching ethnographic film or documentary film focused on indigenous people at the college level. And but being living in Gettysburg, I wanted to sort of turn my camera on that. And I was actually doing research on reenactors before I met these guys. And I wrote a scholarly piece on why do people reenact, trying to explain the passion of reenactment. And then Mark comes along and Sam comes along, and we each bring a different kind of perspective and a sort of background. I mean, I think of Mark as being more of the journalist and history-minded philosopher of us, and then Sam has this really amazing visual perspective as a filmmaker, and has done a lot of work in concert filmmaking, and is really thoughtful, provocative, kind of stunning imagery. And I'm an anthropologist and really interested in people and their quirky
And I'm the son of an anthropologist and also similarly interested in but one thing I must say about Matthew,
you're son of an anthropologist, you.
One thing I must say about Matthew, and from a functional level that was amazing, was that because he was on the ground in Gettysburg, there were things that happened that we needed to shoot, you know, that day. You know, we in the film, and I don't mean to give it all away, but this chapel is torched in an unsolved, you know, a fire. Mm-hmm. And when we heard that, it was like, oh my God, you know, we knew Matthew could get right out there. And you know, so it's, you know, it was amazing. We would never have been able to get from New York down there in time to really capture that kind of stuff. So it was amazing to have Matthew there on the ground all the time. It was great.
And the serendipity of just being, living in the town and getting to know people and having the camera in the back of my car. And sometimes some of the greatest shots in the film were not planned. I mean, a lot of documentary films are in fact scripted on storyboards, right, before they're shot. And there were times when I was going out just to shoot some B-roll or something, and I would see one of our characters, and we already had a release, and they already knew that we were following them over years.
Right.
And I could just jump in and start filming on
boom,
the
new scene all of a sudden. Yeah,
it's really true. And I want to, you know, you reminded me of something. It's sometimes in the back of my mind, it's just the level of intimacy of the movie that we have with these characters, because we do spend a lot of time with them and see their stories unfold and their stories unfold in very unexpected ways. But you know, if 3 million people come to Gettysburg every year, and they're sort of entertained by the history, by the visitor center, by all the mom and pop places, and this movie really it kind of is like a backstage view in a way of what goes into that. And people come for a day, 2 days, 24 hours, 8 hours, 3 hours to spend some money to take a battlefield tour. They might be affected for the rest of their lives. This handful of characters have given their lives to the place. Others go home, but this kind of gives you, you know, it's like the wizard drawing the curtain back and seeing what creates this, right, the magic of this place.
Well, I can attest to that. I went there 40 years ago with my dad, and it had such an impression on me, and it still does. So how fantastic you were able to capture that. The film that we're talking about is Hallowed Ground. It screens tonight, Friday, 6 p.m. at the Southern. I've been talking with the three directors. We could go on for a while, but I don't want our talk to be longer than the film itself. So thank you for coming to the Virginia Film Festival. Just sort of quickly go around, what's up next either with you or with the film after today?
Well,
what's up next with the film? Well, we're looking at more festivals. This is, I should point out that we decided to make our premiere at the Virginia Film Festival because we loved the idea of this festival regionally. It's important in terms of Civil War memory, and we felt like this is a good home for this movie. We're excited to go out to other festivals throughout 2016. And, you know, we're taking it one step at a time with this. And that's where we are now.
If people want to find out more about the film, is there a website?
Yeah, there is. Mark, but what's the URL?
We're at hallowedgroundmovie.org, and we're on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and
all that stuff.
Everything.
We got all that stuff.
Snapchat, yeah, maybe. Don't know. We have a great 15-second trailer. If you don't have time for 59 minutes, I recommend it highly.
Matthew, closing words?
I hope that the film can... We can find out how people feel about this film, you know, beyond places like Charlottesville and Gettysburg that are already steeped in history. Because I do think that there's a kind of human element to this film that might be universal, and I'm curious to see how it resonates if we can get it out more widely. But it's nice to start close to home and a sympathetic audience, and we're looking forward to tonight.
Tonight, 6 p.m., the Southern. The film is The Hallowed Ground. Gentlemen, thank you very much for coming by.
Thank you.